Well, what a lineup for Saturday night. All kinds of music on this program.
It's a wide range, George, from not only from time periods is it wide, but it's very stylistically different.
Well, we're continuing our journey through all these pieces by Beethoven, which you've been systematically performing over the last few years, and here's another.
That's right. As much as we know the name Beethoven, I mean, one of the most famous composers of all times, I mean, even people who are not symphony goers know the name Beethoven. And but when they're talking about Beethoven, we're talking about one piece of music. Out of nine beautiful symphonies and all the sonatas and all the choral repertoire and all the overtures and the opera, it's Beethoven 5. That's what everybody knows. He wrote so much great stuff. And as a matter of fact, Beethoven 5 is not the greatest symphony. There are better symphonies than that in my recollection. I mean, but it's so famous because of that first movement or that ba 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 ba, so identifiable. And the genius of it is how he used it so often and so well in that movement. And then just when he thought he went as far as you could go, he goes another 2 minutes. It's absolutely genius, okay? But we open up with Beethoven's Egmont Overture, which is a standalone overture, concert overture that is just absolutely gorgeous and beautiful and brings Beethoven to the house. It's a great way to start the concert. It's again introducing a famous composer, but introducing some other works that people may not know other than Symphony Number 5 to them so they can see the vast body of work that he really contributed.
Now, I've known that piece of music since I was 6 years old.
No kidding.
And one of the reasons I remember it so well, I was a 6-year-old about to have surgery, and that's sort of when there was a recording of this, and so it's a very serious
It is.
piece.
It is. It's very heavy. It's very dramatic, but beautifully orchestrated. It's
So
very
it
serious.
always stayed with me.
Great.
And gosh, it's young artist competition season again. We have our winner performing on Saturday night.
That's correct. This is a big opportunity for this young man. You know, we have two divisions, and this is a joint competition with the Paducah Symphony Orchestra and proudly with Murray State University. And again, I'm one of the judges annually. We always have other guests that join me, but I like to be there to represent the symphony. And also, I have to be assessing the repertoire, the literature, and the performance space to perform with my orchestra as well. We have a collegiate division, and we also now have a high school division, which brings from region, not only region, but people coming. Last year, the winner was from Ohio, from Cleveland, and is bringing a wider range as this gets more popular.
And I think that's great, having the two divisions now. And it seemed like not so many years ago they were all fiddlers or piano players, and we're branching out more these last few years
That's correct.
into
We're hearing
different
different instruments. And as a matter of fact, the high school division winner will also be performing with the symphony this year, but during the young people's concerts when we bus the kids into Carson Center for those free performances. So that will give them an opportunity to see a high schooler to these younger students to say, that's a person of my age or almost my age that is doing something really amazing. Maybe I can do that too. But this year is won by a tubist.
Hey.
And that's an instrument that's a little bit of an unsung hero in the orchestra.
Well, yeah. You think about tuba concerto, you come up with Ray Vaughan Williams, and you don't
And
remember.
after that, you have to really search hard. Of course, John Williams just wrote one, which is supposed to be
Oh, he
spectacular.
did.
Yes, he did. And this Bruce Broughton has written a concerto, and this I'm proud to say that this young man is a Murray State student. So it's
Yes, he
really a
is.
homegrown kid, and I'm really happy to do this. You know, it's one of these things, I never thought that I would select a tubist in a solo capacity, because we don't think of it as a solo instrument, but it's a beautiful voice. It's very lyrical. It's not that typical boom, boom, boom that one thinks like in a band setting. It's a very lovely setting, and he's going to be playing the first movement, which is a very short movement. This concerto is not very long, but it gives him a chance to shine and bring a tuba, which is great for our audience as well, because it brings that tuba from the back row right up front and gives us a chance to hear the color and how a tuba should be played beautifully like that.
And I poked around a little bit about Broughton and saw that he's a soundtrack composer.
Right.
And he worked on one of my favorite movie soundtracks of all time, and that was Silverado back in
No kidding,
1986,
I
the
did not
Lawrence
know that.
Kasdan film. And I didn't know he had a, I guess, more of a bit part in that.
Wow.
And there's that Korngold Wagenaar
Wagenaar
connection that we're
relationship
talking
again.
about. So
Right.
that's just fantastic. And so, we seem to be hitting some theological heavies this season. We did Death and Transfiguration last time, and now the Reformation Symphony, number 5, yeah, Mr. This Mendelssohn.
A great piece of music. Mendelssohn is such a great composer. I don't know why it's not heard more, you know what I mean? Matter of fact, I'm doing number 1 with another orchestra now, and it's absolutely fabulous. It's a great piece of music. This is number 5, the final symphony that he wrote. He entitled it The Reformation. It's a beautiful, beautiful movement, symphony, and it has one of the most beautiful singing movements of all time in it. That it's the slow movement that he puts in the third spot that is absolutely gorgeous. It begins with the strings and it's just singing quality that is absolutely gorgeous. And of course, he uses a very famous theme at the end, the last movement, which is pom 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 pa da 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 da. And that's in every church hymnal. Okay. And everyone knows the tune. And he just expands on this and develops it into a wild frenzy ending. It's a wonderful symphony.
Now, the 4 notes that are all over that symphony were been going through my head all week, and I didn't realize until I was poking around yesterday that they're the same 4 notes from the Jupiter Symphony,
That's correct. That's correct. Mendelssohn did a lot of his homework. Matter of fact, he just loved Bach. And you can see that in his music. He also loved Mozart and studied this very much. He was a big Bach fan, loved Mozart. Therefore, by the study, it wasn't in the days where he was able to listen to a recording of it, of course. Mm-hmm. He had to realize the score or listen to performances. So, but by studying other composers' scores, you see how they orchestrated, you see thematic material, you see how they developed a theme or an idea, and what they were doing architecturally with a piece. And by playing it at the piano, he probably learned things, borrowed things, and great composers borrowed from other great composers. This is how it works. And Mendelssohn was a great student of composition and became a great composer himself, and as far as a musician and as well as a conductor.
Now, was it Mendelssohn or maybe Schumann that brought Bach back after he had fallen out of favor in the classical period?
It's Mendelssohn.
Wasn't it Mendelssohn?
Mendelssohn, yes. Really a champion of Bach's music. Matter of fact, he made Bach more famous than when Bach was alive.
I can see that. Yeah. You know, it was the church job and right. All the local stuff. And so, Howard Hanson, the suite from the opera Marymount. Now, isn't that a Puritan setting? I don't really know the tale, and I hardly know
exactly.
The piece.
It ends with a Maripole dance, you know, the whole thing. I mean, you know, Howard Hanson was a good old boy from Nebraska. Midwest, bringing with the great values. And I think this opera just probably touched him, his idea that lifestyle, you know, kind of thing. Believe it or not, I've never seen the opera, nor have I seen it performed or heard of it being performed in the last 50 years, maybe, okay? But this opera, believe it or not, Marymount, when it debuted at the Metropolitan Opera, received over 15 ovations. 50
no,
ovations.
No kidding.
Over 50 ovations, which means to this day, this opera is still holding the record for the most ovations of any opera performed at the Metropolitan Opera. Yet, we don't see it or hear it performed any.
Excuse me while I pull up my fallen chin.
Isn't that amazing? Over 50 ovations. They said it went on for such a long time. And yet, it's not performed. It's not performed. This suite, he did a beautiful job. It's typical Hanson. We've done symphonies 1 and 2 here in the last several seasons here. The audience loves him. Again, it's very commercial music sounding almost.
Very approachable.
Very approachable, very sung. It's very tonal. He uses a nice rhythm aspect to his music. It's very appealing for the orchestra and the audience. They're going to love this little suite that he put together. Again, it's an opera without words. It's just the music put together in what he calls an orchestral suite.
Now, are they 4 movements or they run together?
They run together.
Okay. And Debussy, La Mer. Now, I have to ask you, did you have trouble deciding whether you were going to end the program with the Mendelssohn or the Debussy?
You know, it was a bit of a choice. A bit of a choice, but this also has a spectacular ending to it. And I think the Mendelssohn's a good way to close the first half.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Marymount will open the second half, give us something of Hanson, and then Debussy to end because, you know, this is river country. We are on the water. So La Mer was a natural, and I've been waiting to do it for quite a while. But it takes a really, really great orchestra to pull this off because it's very, very difficult. Technically, there's a lot of solo repertoire for both the strings and the woodwind players. It's just Absolutely gorgeous music.
Is it a very large orchestra like some of the Strauss tone poems?
It's huge, yes. Yeah. It's a big, because Debussy, like Strauss, was big into color. This is why we always talk about Impressionism, and we relate them to painters, because all the different palette sounds they
Mahler
have, and Mahler
one.
The same thing too, right?
Well, I voted for Lemaire. You know, we've had all this more traditional music, and then we get into the more mysterious, quote, at the time, modern or different sound, and then it gets you on that juggernaut and takes you right out to the end.
Absolutely.
What a way to ramp it up.
It's really huge. And, you know, the fact that he wrote for two harps, and they're very distinct soloistic parts. They're conveying back and forth this conversation throughout the entire work. You know, and the thing is, what Debussy captured beautifully is the water as we know it. You know, whether you're on Kentucky Lake on a beautiful Saturday afternoon and it's the most beautiful, the most calming, the most wonderful thing. Yet, as we've seen by the recent storms and the hurricanes on the East Coast, unfortunately, that it could be the most violent and destructive force on Earth, too.
Yeah.
So Debussy captures both the beauty, the calmness, and then the turmoil and the wind and the excitement. It's really an amazing piece of music.
Sounds like a great evening to be had by all.
It will be. I look forward to seeing everyone at the symphony.